Blog Talk Radio.
Oh, that's great. That sounds terrific. Thank you.
Carolina, we're challenging the Castle Doctrine / self-defense law. Can you kill an unarmed man for being on your property trespassing, even if it is in the middle of the night? Well, the family of Mark Howard is saying that's exactly what happened. They contend the evidence does not show that Mark Howard ever broke into the car or the truck of Richard Williams. It seems back in 2001, then Attorney General Charlie Condon made a statement. And it seems like ever since he made that particular statement / mandate, There's been a slew of shootings classified as home invasions where the homeowners are walking. And when I say walking, meaning never being charged for or even really seeming to be investigated fully for the shootings. It appears that, this is a quote, in 2001, Attorney General Condon declared an open season on home invaders. He mandated that citizens defending their home against invasions should not be arrested, charged, or even prosecuted. The message needs to be sent loudly and clearly that the state is going to back the homeowner if their home is invaded. He said in an interview that I'm putting home invaders on notice that if an occupant chooses to use deadly force, there will be no prosecution. Mr. Condon said that he was tired of seeing homeowners who defended their homes dragged through lengthy investigations and trials before being cleared, when it was obvious to him they had done nothing wrong. He went on to say that you don't want to put the homeowner in a position of saying, if I use deadly force, I might be cleared after the trial. Mr. Condon said that's tantamount to saying that people have rights, but there's a huge cross attached to it. He further stated that most courts have a laissez-faire attitude about things, figuring that everything will come out fine after the trial. But I think we need to send a message that the home is sacred, ground, period. Now, that's the message that the then Attorney General, Charlie Condon, made. He was in office from 1993 to 2003, and this statement was made in 2001. And one can only wonder how many shootings have been justified under the Castle Doctrine since the Attorney General made this statement. We're going to speak to the family of Mark Howard tonight, and we're also going to speak to Dr. Zoe Spencer. And they're saying that this particular shooting was not justified under either the Castle Doctrine or the self-defense law. Right now we're going to open the phone lines of Dr. Zoe Spencer and Peggy Lewis. Good evening, you all. How are you?
Good evening.
Okay, fine.
You all heard the intro. Do you feel that what Charlie Condon did was kind of like open up the door for anyone who has a problem with anyone, if they happen to be on their property, that they could just shoot them, kill them, get away with it, nothing's going to ever be said or done?
If I can start, Peggy, you know, In dealing with this case and another case that I was working on, I had the opportunity to go back and read exactly what you presented, Carrie. And what's interesting is that dealing with the statement or the mandate that Charlie Condon issued in 2001 and then understanding both the Castle Doctrine, which is actually in South Carolina codified as South Carolina Code 1611-440 and 450, and then looking at the self-defense, quote-unquote, law, which isn't really a law that was committed to by a legislative body, but it's a common law, I recognize that what Charlie Condon said in the mandate that he has issued actually supersedes not only South Carolina law, but it also supersedes constitutional law. And that, for me, is problematic because having dealt with Ms. Lewis's case and also Bobby Gadsden's case, I understand now that it appears that Charlie Condon's mandate is the precedence by which not only police officers are acting, but homeowners are acting, and then solicitor's office and then the South Carolina State's Attorney General's office is also acting in accordance with that mandate. And that mandate by no means reflects the existing law. And so for me, I think that's very, very problematic.
Peggy, do you
yes.
think that that particular law, Castle Doctrine / self-defense or whatever they want to call it today, tomorrow it seems like it's going to be something else, but so far we've been told Castle Doctrine, we've been told self-defense, and even today we were told perceived threat. Do you think any of that justifies the shooting that killed your brother?
Absolutely not. No, there was no reason to kill someone that's leaving your property. There's no evidence whatsoever that he was even in the car.
You know, speaking of that, the police report, and we're just going to kind of give you an overview of the police report because one is very short and the other one is very lengthy. But basically it just says that, you know, Richard Wayne Williams on February 14th of this year was asleep at his home. I think he said initially the motion detector light went off. He woke up, looked out, didn't see anything, went back to sleep. I think the second time the motion detector light went off, he got up, looked out a second time, and he said he saw an unknown male, and he assumed that the male was standing next to his truck, so therefore he must have broken into his 1998 Ford F-150 that actually was parked in the rear of the house. So there is a detached garage behind this particular house, and the truck was parked in front of this detached garage. And so he says he got up and he said he dressed himself, and then he said he armed himself, and then he went downstairs, I'm assuming, or to his garage. I think he did say he went downstairs to the garage, hit the garage door opener. The garage door opened, and then that's when he said that he saw Mark passing by him on a bicycle. He's saying that Mark had something. It appears to be, it was a flashlight. He said he thought it was a gun, and so he said he shot Mark. And then he said Mark continued to travel down the driveway, and he ended up falling off the bike, I believe, across the neighbor's street. I'm sorry, he took two shots. Is that not correct? He took two shots, correct?
Yeah, three shots. We just found out.
Okay, it was how many?
There's actually three shots. We just found out about a third one this week.
Okay. I think the initial police report said he took two shots,
one striking Mark,
and one, we were told, went across the street, traveled, and it's quite a bit of distance. What is the distance between the house, where the garage where he said that he took the shot, to the house across the street, which I believe is 2012, and his property is like 2015? So they're on opposite sides of the street, and it's quite a long driveway. What was the distance of that driveway?
It's approximately 100 and... probably about 100, greater than 120, 130 feet.
Okay. So, you know, the bullet traveled all the way down the driveway, across a road, and into the neighbor's house. And what it did, it went, I think they had like a house that was siding and not brick. And what I understand is it went through the siding, went through an exercise ball that was on the floor in front of an entertainment center, exited the ball, and then went into the entertainment center. Do I have that right, Joe?
Carrie, can I stop you for a minute?
Sure.
The actual footage is 166.9 feet from Mr. Williams' home is where one of the shots were found in that home that you're speaking about.
Okay. So the bullet traveled, you know, allegedly that far from the home of Richard Wayne Williams to the neighbor who's located across the street at 2012. And, again, Mr. Williams' property is 2015. Okay, allegedly that's what happened that night, y'all. But the family is saying that's an impossibility. They're saying that they are challenging the findings of the police department, and they are actually calling the shooting a murder. So, Ms. Lewis, I'd like to ask you, why are you all feeling that this was not a situation as the homeowner stated, but, in fact, you all are saying that it's a murder?
Well, there's too many inconsistencies. In the first report, it says that he shot twice. The first time, he did not know if he hit Mark, so he dove to the ground and shot in the air. We were told at that time that that bullet was found in the neighbor's yard next door. Several weeks later, we found out that that bullet was actually in the eave of the home next door. We just found out about the bullet that ended up in 2012 Morningside.
Mm-hmm.
We just found out about that just here a few days ago. There was three, one in the home next door, one across the street in 2012, and one in my brother.
And I did contact
And he was leaving.
I'm sorry?
And he was leaving. He was going down the driveway.
He was going down the
driveway. He had no weapons. He was not, no fingerprints on the vehicle or in the vehicle.
Okay, let's start there. The vehicle was parked, like I said, in the rear of the house, in front of the detached garage. The police department checked for fingerprints. They did not find fingerprints inside or outside of the vehicle. So you question, you know, or just, you know, logic makes you wonder, did he ever even enter the vehicle if his fingerprints are not there?
Right.
Terry, if I can interject really quickly, because I want to, you know, back what Ms. Lewis just said. And, again, Ms. Lewis contacted me because she was initially told that this case was deemed a justifiable homicide based on the Castle Doctrine. And she found me through my dealings with the Bobby Yaston case.
Mm-hmm.
And, again, when she told me the circumstances of her brother's murder, that he was, in fact, riding away on a bicycle, and she sent me the original incident report, it was automatically outside of the confines of the Castle Doctrine, because the Castle Doctrine is very, very clear. And I think, and what I've observed in dealing with South Carolina and their perception of the Castle Doctrine, is that the perception of the Castle Doctrine is actually quite different than what the Castle Doctrine actually says. And it's very specific about what constitutes a justifiable homicide, and it's very specific that in order to meet the criteria of the Castle Doctrine, there have to be several things present. Number one, the homeowner has to be in imminent fear of a threat of to his life or great bodily injury. That's number one. And the threat has to be occurring at a point where there is forceful or forcible entry into either the homeowner's home, an occupied vehicle, and this is in the case of a carjacking as an example, or the place of business. And the person who is forcefully entering the home has to be doing so with the intent to commit a violent crime, as is defined in South Carolina's Code 16-1-50. So automatically when she called me and she told me about her brother's case, I understood that it did not meet the Castle Doctrine, because trespassing or breaking into an unoccupied vehicle or tampering with, if in fact that's what he's doing, because, that's what he was doing, I question that. Taking any change or anything out of the vehicle does not justify the use of deadly force. The second thing with that is the fact that when I looked at the incident report, Mr. Williams stated that he was inside of his home. Mr. Howard was in his yard by a detached garage, as you stated, quote-unquote, by his truck. Now, there were no fingerprints found on the truck. I do have the crime scene photos, and there is no evidence whatsoever that Mr. Howard entered his truck in any way. None. Zero. None. So that puts that to rest. However, in the case of using deadly force, he saw him from out of the window. He was in the safety of his own home. And in the Castle Doctrine, I believe South Carolina has also implemented that the homeowner does not have a duty to retreat. That means if Mr. Howard were breaking into Mr. Williams' home, he doesn't have to try to run and call the police and get help. However, if he sees somebody outside of his home and he decides to go outside of his home and confront that person, then he removes himself from the Castle Doctrine. Now enter self-defense law. Self-defense law is not an actual law. It's not legislation. It's not codified anywhere. But what it is it's common law that's established by the judge in their responses to certain cases. Generally, self-defense is a defense. And so you first have to be charged, and then you can plead self-defense. And then the prosecutor will have to prosecute you and be able to prosecute you if you use that defense. The core with this case is that Mr. Williams was safely in his home. Mr. Howard was unarmed. He wasn't tampering with the vehicle. There are no fingerprints on the vehicle. But Mr. Williams made a conscious decision to leave out of the safety of his home and decided to confront Mr. Howard with his gun. So automatically, and when you're talking about imminent fear, when you are fearful of a situation, do you leave your home to confront a suspected perpetrator? Did he think about whether or not Mr. Howard may be armed when he decided to get his gun and go to his back door, press his garage door open, wait for it to rise, and then, so he says, see Mr. Howard passing by on his bicycle and pointing a flashlight at him. Okay, so at that point, it also takes him out of self-defense. And I spoke to the solicitor of the 11th Circuit today, and he cited self-defense. I want to read for you really quickly what self-defense says so that as people begin to think about it, they understand the confines of the law.
Let me explain
The
solicitor in South Carolina is equivalent to the prosecutor in most areas.
Yes, exactly. Exactly. And when I spoke to him today and he refused to hold West Columbia accountable for reopening the investigation, he cited to me self-defense law, and we actually got into a debate, and I guess he decided that he was not going to debate with me. However, this is what it states, and in State versus Fuller, which is the judicial ruling that establishes self-defense law in South Carolina, there are four things that have to be met. Number one, you must be without fault in bringing on the difficulty. So at the point where Mr. Williams decides to leave the safety of his home instead of calling the police and allowing the police to apprehend Mr. Howard, he initiates, he becomes the initiator. So that's questionable. Number two, you must actually believe that you are in imminent danger of loss of life or serious bodily injury, or actually be in such danger, which is the same as the Castle Doctrine codified in South Carolina law. And then if you believe you're in such danger, you must use deadly force only if a reasonable or prudent man of ordinary firmness and courage would have believed himself to be in such danger. And then four, most importantly, you had no other probable means of avoiding the danger of losing your own life or sustaining serious bodily injury than to act as you did in the particular instance. So it says that all four of these features have to be met in order to find self-defense as a justification for a homicide. Number one is done, because Mr. Williams made a conscious decision to leave out of his home, and therefore he became the initiator. But most importantly, number four is really significant in this case, because it's saying that you had no other probable means of avoiding the danger. Mr. Williams never had to go and open his garage door to confront Mr. Howard, an unarmed man who was standing by his vehicle, not attempting to break into his home. He did not have any reason other than to confront Mr. Howard with his own gun when he opened the garage door. So at the point that he opened the garage door and he perceived Mr. Howard to have had a weapon or extended his arm or whatever he said, he brought about the danger to himself by deciding to confront him. And what I don't understand is that I'm not an attorney, nor am I an investigator, and this goes back to Condon's statement. I am neither. So my question becomes, is the law being objectively applied in South Carolina? Or has Charlie Condon's mandate superseded the law in South Carolina and then superseded Mr. Howard's right to live and be dealt with by the criminal justice system?
And you know what? We're going to play the 911 tape in just a second, and we're going to let you all decide what you think about that, because you're right. It does make one question whether or not that's the case. I did reach out to the West Columbia, South Carolina Police Department today. And I did speak with Major Jackie Brothers. And in order to show balance, I did ask her several questions and asked her if she would respond via email, and she did. And then you all can listen to the answers to these questions and then listen to the 911 tape, which we're about to play, and then you decide. I asked Major Brothers specifically how many bullets were fired by Richard Williams that night. Now, you just heard the family say there were three, but because I asked the question, how many bullets were fired, because there appears to be three total. I asked her specifically, was one in the neighbor's house that was directly next door? Was one lodged in the eaves of the neighbor directly next door to Mr. Williams? Secondly, I asked her, was there a bullet that went across the street at 2012? Which went through an exercise ball and through an entertainment center. And then I asked her, "What did the third one not hit Mark Howard and is still lodged inside the body?" Her answer was, to one, when I asked her, was the neighbor next door, was there a bullet that lodged inside the eaves? Her answer was that there was two bullets fired, and there was two spent shell casings. She said the hole in the next door neighbor's eave was not a bullet, per them. It was not a bullet hole, per Major Jackie Brothers. And then the answer to the question about was there not another bullet that went to 2012 across the street and go inside the exercise ball and then into the entertainment center? Her answer to that was that one of the rounds went into the residence and the other struck Mr. Howard. So she does say, yes, one did go into the residence across the street and the other one did strike Mr. Howard. My next question to her was, under the South Carolina self-defense law, what did you call it, SC-16-11-440, I asked her, if you're stating that Mr. Howard, I said, how are you stating, rather, that Mr. Howard posed a threat to Mr. Williams? And I said, A, seeing that he was riding away from Mr. Williams, B, Mark Howard was unarmed, C, Mr. Howard did not approach in a threatening manner, and D, Richard Williams' first shot missed, seeing that there was no blood pattern on the driveway that led from the point that Mr. Williams says the shot was taken to the house across the street. So the family is contending if the shot was taken at the garage, and then their brother traveled from that point all the way down that long garage and across the street, there should have been a blood pattern leading to where he fell. Major Brothers' answers were, we are not utilizing South Carolina's law 16-11-440. As she said, she had repeatedly told me in conjunction with the prosecutor, Riddle, they determined that they could not meet the prosecutorial burden of proving self-defense did not exist in the mind of Mr. Williams beyond a reasonable doubt. So, in essence, to break that down, they're saying they can't disprove what he said. So that means that they're saying that if they can't disprove what he's saying, then therefore they're going to leave it alone.
Investigate it. It closed within 2 days. They didn't do anything. They didn't do no ballistics. They didn't do anything.
And that's
they took the homeowner's word for it and shut it down.
Thing. The family found out today there was no ballistics done on the bullet.
This becomes the question, and this becomes where the three shots as opposed to the two become relevant in this case, and where we, begin to cross the line, and whether or not there was no investigation, whether or not there was a lacking investigation, whether or not there was an investigation done and then there's still a misapplication. So this is where it comes into play. As far as their ruling of self-defense is concerned, basically what they're arguing, because if the prosecutor processes the case or prosecutes the case, and first they're assuming that Mr. Williams would use a self-defense defense, which is hypothetical. But if they prosecuted, they would be the ones that would have to show that Mr. Williams was not justified in committing the homicide of Mr. Howard. And so what they're arguing or what they're saying is that they don't have the proof to show that it was not self-defense. Okay. Now, if you take the incident or as reported by Mr. Williams, he states that he opened his garage. Mr. Howard was coming toward him. He shot one shot. He didn't know if he hit him, and then he shot another shot into the air. Okay.
He dove to the ground.
He dove to the ground, and then he shot the other shot in the air. Okay. If that's the case, number one, self-defense is out of the question anyway, because he already initiated and instigated putting his own self in danger. So that's just dead in the water. And if there are any attorneys who are not biased and who are able to look at it objectively and understand the law objectively, I am quite sure that they would agree. However, let's take it that doesn't rule him out. If he shoots Mark Howard at his garage and he says that he feared for his life at that time, then you can play with it. Then it, you know, it's more likely, or you can kind of understand that, you know, you may believe what he says, that he thought Mark was pointing a weapon at him, and so he fired.
But see, and to finish answering the way, or giving the answers that she gave, she basically said that Mark was not riding away. I'm sorry, she said he was not riding away at the time the shot was fired. He was immediately in front of Mr. Williams when the shot was fired. The family says that could not have been the case. And she goes on to say that in the darkness, Mr. Williams stated that Mr. Howard's arm was raised in his direction, leading him to believe Mr. Howard was indeed armed. So he's saying simply because the man's arm was raised in the air, you know, it's dark outside, therefore he
How
says...
How do you see an arm raised in the air if it's dark outside, if it's so dark?
That's a good point, another good point. And then said one shot did strike Mr. Howard. There was no blood trail because the blood saturated in his clothing. So she felt like the blood pattern that I was asking about that should have led from the garage, from the point of the garage where the shot supposedly was taken, all the way across the street to the neighbor's house, which is a good distance. She's saying there was zero blood, you all. That's the point. Zero blood pattern from the point of the garage all the way across the street. No blood. And she's saying that was the case because all of the blood was saturated inside of the clothing of Mark Howard. But the family contends the pictures from the crime scene photos, they don't show that much blood in the clothing of Mark Howard. And you all justify that how?
Can I take this? I want to go back though first to her statement and also to Mr. Williams' statement that Mark Howard was coming toward him. Mark Howard was shot in the anatomical chest. That doesn't mean, you know, when we think about chest, we think about you shooting between the breastbone and that being the chest. But the chest is the area underneath of the ribs. Mark Howard was actually shot underneath of his arm. That's first and foremost. And so if he was coming toward Mr. Williams, as both Major Brothers and Mr. Williams both assert, and that first shot hit him, then the shot probably would not be located in the area underneath of his arm, because the shot goes underneath of his arm, it cracks his rib, pierces both of his lungs, and then goes into his heart, and then almost exits out the other side of his body. Okay, so that's the first thing. So that coming towards theory is probably unlikely given the autopsy report. That's the first thing. The second thing with the blood spatter and blood, and I had to research it because, again, I'm not a medical doctor either, but I did research it. Doctor, I'm going to give you his name because I want, you know, people are going to say, oh, she's not a doctor or whatever, but it is Dr. Maurizio Miglietta did a study, and I have other studies as well, but he did a study on trauma and gunshot wounds, and he caused the wound to the chest a drop wound, and he argues that if you want to drop somebody, that means if you want to render them immediately incapacitated, the most secure way of doing that is shooting them through the heart. Even if you shoot someone in the brain, it doesn't necessarily mean that they will be incapacitated, and the reason for that is because in striking them in the heart, you strike major blood vessels along with it. So the likelihood, number one, that Mr. Howard would have been shot through both lungs and then shot in his heart and been able to pedal more than 130-something yards to the point where he fell in the neighbor's yard is medically unlikely. It's not my opinion. It is what it is. That's number one. Number two, if in fact he were, by some stretch of the imagination, be able to pedal a bicycle up an incline 130-something yards to the place where his body rested, each time his heart beats, blood is pumping, and so blood will pump outside of the wound. So the likelihood that he would have been able to pedal a bicycle with a gunshot wound that turned out to be fatal to his heart and not leave any blood anywhere from the garage all the way to the neighbor's yard is highly unlikely. If you look at the crime scene photos, there is blood on the inside of Mark's jacket, and it's not even a significant amount of blood, which would suggest that Mark Howard was shot, and this is very crucial to the case, very, very crucial, that Mark Howard was shot at the place where he rested. And the place where his body rested was in the neighbor across the street from Mr. Williams' home's yard. So the question is, if you took your two shots and none of your two shots hit him, but yet he gets shot a third time, and the two bullets are accountable for, one is in the eaves of the neighbor and the other is in the neighbor's house across the street, did you pursue him to take that third shot? And if you didn't pursue him to take that third shot, which is why we want the ballistics, who shot him the third time?
I got something to say here, though, Carrie.
Uh-huh.
Miss Major Brother is saying that Mark was going toward him. In the report, the very first report Mr. Williams did, it says that he was going by on his bicycle.
Absolutely.
So how could he be going toward him?
I wanted to bring up another point about the, and I agree with that totally. And I don't want us to forget the whole issue about the ballistics as well. In most cases, and I guess I watch too many crime scene CSI shows or whatever, but isn't it in most cases the ballistics is what is used to determine whether or not there is a reason to bring charges?
That's what I thought. But
yeah,
according to West Columbia Police Department, they did not do it because, in their words, such items were, there's no criminal charges have been filed or are pending. So it is not the South Carolina Law Enforcement Division's policy to do anything with the ballistics.
Okay, well, y'all heard that. So they're saying that they decided not, because they didn't bring any charges against him, there was no reason to do ballistics, which you think in most cases, if you did the ballistics, that would tell you whether or not you needed to file charges.
Right.
I'm just saying. In West, South, West, what is this? I don't know. Where am I at? Southwest? What is
West
this? Columbia, Southwest? I'm
West
sorry.
Columbia, South Carolina.
Yeah, South Carolina. That's crazy. I'm sorry, y'all. That makes no sense. I mean, in any big city, ballistics are crucial to an investigation. So for them to say that it's not a part of the investigation because they didn't bring charges against the man makes no sense.
It was very obvious, Carrie, and I'm going to put myself out because, I have had the opportunity to scrutinize everything, and Ms. Lewis, has provided the documents. And number one, it speaks volumes because Ms. Lewis has been trying to get the documents pertaining to her brother's death since February. This incident happens in February, and she's been met with all kinds of reluctance and excuses as to why she can't get the documents, and they're trying to, circumvent the law in giving her the documents. And then we finally get all of these things, and these things are actually disproving what they said in the first place. And so it brings question, were you hiding it or were you trying to keep it away from Ms. Lewis because you didn't want her to see that your evidence does not support your finding? I mean, that's where we are right now. And so I am going to put it on notice, and I'm putting it on blast, that I really, really question West Columbia's officials, and I also question the solicitor and the state's attorney's office in South Carolina as to how they are misapplying the laws in order to protect homeowners from prosecution when, in fact, at the least, they should be prosecuted for involuntary manslaughter.
Mm. Ooh, I agree with that totally. I'm just saying, y'all. And then
permission down there to be the judge, jury, and executioner. They don't need the law because they can do it and get by with it, and there's nothing that's going to come out of it. And they know that, the homeowners do.
Before we play this 911 tape, y'all, I want to mention the last point that I asked Major Jackie Brothers today is what property did Mark Howard have on his person that belonged to Richard Williams? So if you are saying the man broke into your truck, he's taken something from you, you've taken his life, what did he take from you? And I was told he took cash money from Mr. Williams' vehicle. But in actuality, the cash money that she's referring to, it's change, y'all. They're saying that he stole $36.70-some-odd in change. So, you know, I don't know how else to put that, but that just, to me, does not
seem
right.
Who has $36 in their car?
I'm just, if we have question. I mean, the family is questioning who keeps $36 worth of change in their car.
But
I know my car does not have any kind of devices in it where I can store $36 at. I mean, in change anyway.
In
I mean,
fairness,
that's quite a bit of change. So I don't know, but they're just that's just putting that out there, food for thought. But they're saying that it was $36 and some odd cents worth of change.
In fairness to Mark, though, Carrie, let's also put that in perspective because, you know, a lot of people on the blogs that I've read or what have you, you know, what happens when these things happen, we want to villainize the victim. We want to find a reason to villainize and criminalize a victim. Major Brothers can say what she wants to say about where Mark got that money. However, there was no evidence, no fingerprints on the truck. I've seen the photos, and they took many. They took actually more pictures, crime scene photos, of Mr. Williams' truck than they did of the crime scene around Mr. Howard's body, which is very telling to me. But I don't care what Major Brothers says, and at any point, you know, because they've closed the investigation, if we want to get together and go over the crime scene photos and have a discussion about it, I would be more than happy to do that because I saw the pictures of the truck, and Mr. Howard never touched Mr. Williams' truck. So unless, and they'll say he had a glove on. He had one glove on one hand, and I don't know, Peggy, is he left-handed or right-handed?
Mark's right-handed.
Okay, and the glove is on his left hand. So
yes.
The likelihood that he would have stolen $36 worth of change, first of all, the change would have had to have been maybe, I don't know, under the truck or somewhere where they didn't dust for fingerprints, but he never, ever entered Mr. Williams' truck. And so for her to say that he took money from the truck is a complete fabrication that's supported by West Columbia's own evidence.
And I agree with that.
They said that it was in a sock in his backpack.
Okay, let's go back to the fact, too. What was inside the truck that was more valuable than the $36? Wasn't there a bow and arrow and some other things in the truck?
There was like a charm bracelet. There's a bow and arrow. There was things in there. I believe a battery charger. But there's probably 30-something pictures of the truck. There's not many of Mark around. They moved him. They put a flashlight by his hand, and another picture of the flashlight's by his feet. I mean, it's ridiculous.
Okay, again, I'm reminding y'all, there was no flashlight. I mean, there was no, you know, gun on Mr. Howard. So he was defenseless in terms of defending himself. There was no fingerprints inside the truck. You know, so there's not any real evidence that Mark ever entered Mr. Williams' truck that night. So,
and even if he had, and this is, you know, this statement is for the listeners, and I'm sure I'll get back flack from it because, you know, I think people think that the right to bear arms automatically equates into the right to take a life. And so I hear people say, well, you know, if they come in my house, if they mess with my stuff, if they come on my yard, you know, if they trespass, whatever, if anybody does anything to me, I am going to shoot them first and ask questions later. Mark could have taken money from Mr. Williams' truck. He could have actually stolen Mr. Williams' truck. And there is no law, either actual law or common law, that supports using deadly force to protect your property. The deadly force can only be used and justified by being used to protect your life or the life or the safety of your family, not your property. And I think that, you know, I don't know if people are really ready for the Castle Doctrine because it's expanded into something that it was not designed to be. And I think people are really taking advantage of the fact that they feel that they can murder a person and be protected by the state of South Carolina, and so they don't have to exercise any kind of restraint, and they do not have to any longer depend on the law to handle criminal offenses. And I think that, you know, for people who are law-abiding citizens, who are fair and into human rights, I think that we really, really, really need to take a look at what that means and what that can turn into, because it's turning really, really ugly.
Okay, y'all, we got to get this 911 tape on so everyone can hear it. If you just tuned in, you're listening to the all-new KLHD's 98.9 The Talk, bringing you center stage for tonight's topic. Does the Castle Doctrine justify the murder of Mark Howard? If you're on the phone lines and have a question or a comment, press 1. Or if you're listening in via the Internet, dial in at 347-850-8390. And again, press 1. A reminder, the chat room is open tonight. So if you have a question or a comment, you can post it up in the chat room. And I will try to pose it to the guests before the end of the hour. However, if you don't have a Blog Talk Radio user account, you'll need to go over to blogtalkradio.com at this time and apply for one in order to chat. Tonight's segment of Center Stage is being brought to you by African American News and Commentary Blog, your single source for news, events, and commentary that is of unique interest to African Americans. They're located on the web at www.africanamericannewsandcommentary.com. Tonight's segment of Center Stage is also being brought to you by Daily Deposits for the Soul, your daily guide to enriching your soul and improving your mind in just 15 minutes a day. They're located on the web at www.dailydepositsforthesoul.com. Okay, y'all, we're going to the 911 tape. This is the tape from the shooting that killed Mark Howard. Here we go.
Monday, February 14th, 2011. The time, 3:33 a.m. Ricky, stay in the bed. Somebody's breaking into your daddy's truck. Hey, Reggie.
No, what's your
emergency? There was someone breaking into my husband's truck.
Okay, and where is it at? On the 2:50 Morningside?
Yeah, please.
Okay, they still out there?
No.
All right, I'll have officers around, okay? Yeah. Stay on line for me, okay? 21, 22, 26. Morningside, reference to a break into a vehicle in progress. Do you see what they look like or anything like that? If it's a male or a female or?
Yes, sir. Listen to me. They pointed a gun at my husband.
Okay.
My husband fired. They are down in our yard.
Okay, hang on one second.
Please.
Be advised that the complainant states that her husband shot the subject. He's supposed to be on the ground at that location. Is he moving at all?
I do see movement, yes.
Okay, now you said you're.
Yes.
Affirmative.
He is down.
Okay, now you said something about your husband, pointed something at him?
He pointed a gun at my husband.
All right, hang on. Be advised that going to the complainant, subject pointed a gun at the husband, returned car, and put the subject down. All right, ma'am, I'm going to have all my officers come out over there. Just have your husband stand by there, okay?
Okay. We've got a little child, so we're trying our best to stay.
All right. Right here. Let me ask you, the person who's been shot, is he complaining about, you know, being hit anywhere?
He actually made himself across the, we've got a pretty busy road. He made himself across our road. He's laying in our neighbor's yard.
All right. You still see him, though, right?
Yes, sir.
Okay. Just keep an eye on him and make sure he don't go anywhere, okay?
Okay. I'm trying, yes.
All right. Officer responded. Subject's down across the street in a neighbor's yard. Husband still has an eyesight. All right. Just keep an eye on him, and I have all my officers around, okay?
Okay.
All right.
Okay, y'all, that was a 911 tape. Now, I listened to that tape several times, and I observed several things, and I just want to know, did anybody hear any other things that I heard in that particular tape?
I heard
one thing. It appears to me that the demeanor of the wife changes from the time prior to the operator entering the line. They have a thing down there in West Columbia, by the way, y'all. It starts to record you on the 911 call before the operator ever picks up. So So per what I was told, they learn a lot of very interesting things sometimes because people are not aware that's the case. But it does seem that the demeanor of the wife seems to change before she knows that the operator or that before she knows that she's being recorded. She seems very, very calm, in my opinion. And then she seems very shaken once the operator gets on the line. Did anyone else notice that?
How did you get his
bike
across the street?
I surely did.
Okay. Hey, I've got a question.
Okay.
With the on the 911 tape, she says that he is down in her yard.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And then another minute later, she says he is down in the neighbor's yard.
Peggy,
how did
he
get up and get on his bike and go to the neighbor's yard?
She said, and I quote, and I got to piggyback on what Peggy said. She said he made himself across to the neighbor's yard as if he slid or, whether he got back on his bike or he walked over there or what have you. And then I want to add to her what she says. They act as if it's in progress, like she's observing it as it's going along. And I would like the listeners to know that according to Mr. Williams' account of the incident, I didn't make it up. I'm just reading what the official reports state that he stated, that the incident began around 3-ish, that the actual shooting, Mr. Williams himself said, occurred around 3:15. The coroner estimates the time of death of Mark Howard at 3:20, based on Mr. Williams' testament or his account that the shooting occurred at 3:15. The 911 call is not made until 3:33. That is 13 minutes after Mark Howard has passed, 18 minutes after the incident has occurred, and nearly a half an hour after Mr. Williams saw Mr. Howard by his truck, by his own account. Why didn't they just call 911 when they first saw him outside?
I need to know how the wife knows that there's a gun being pointed at her husband when she's supposedly in the house while it's in progress.
Well, wait a minute, y'all. Let's take one question at a time.
Okay.
First of all, why didn't they call 911 if they see someone out just appearing to be breaking in the truck? Why would you then go out when they weren't trying to break in the house and they were just breaking in the truck? Why wouldn't you just call 911? This is at 3. This is like 3:15 in the morning.
3-ish. No,
3 a.m. And the chat room is asking, was it a.m.? Yes, this is 3:15 a.m. on Valentine's Day morning. So why did they not just call 911?
Especially if you're scared, because remember, we're dealing with the law. And the solicitor and the police department's justification is we're dealing with self-defense, and as major brothers, even though it's not a legal precedent, the perception of fear. If you perceive a fear, you see someone at your car, out of your window, in the safety of your home, and you decide to confront them not knowing what they have. So if you perceive a fear, why wouldn't you call 911 even when you're in the process of going outside to confront them?
Oh, I agree. I completely agree.
And then, Peggy, I didn't want to interrupt because Peggy was bringing up a really
up a good point. But I'm trying to hit every single point because all of them are valid. Every single one of them are valid. And, Peggy, your next point was what?
I brought up where they found Mark. Just one moment. The operator says that, the homeowner's wife says that Mark is moving in their yard, laying there, and then gets up and goes over to the other yard across the street. And she says a busy street at 3 o'clock in the morning. I really don't know how busy it could be.
And
did he take his bike with him?
Just
so he dropped on the ground
that.
Of their
I said, did Mark,
yard,
did got Mark get up off
bike,
of
and
ground,
rode it across the street?
Get back on the bike and travel across the street and then
how?
Fall? Or did he first fall in their yard, then get back on the bike and then travel and then fall in the neighbor's yard? And she said, no, he fell where he died, and that was at the neighbor's house. So I'm not certain why the wife says on the 911 call that he's first fallen in their yard and she can see him moving.
Because she lied.
Because she lied.
That's why. Mrs. Williams lied. Period. That's
okay.
why.
Well,
and let's not. I'm not going to sugarcoat it this evening. It's a lie. And if he fell in her yard, especially if he fell in her yard and was laying in her yard, as she states, there would be some blood evidence in her yard. However, the crime scene investigation doesn't even go into her front yard where she reported Mark lying. So something, first she lied because then that's disproven. It's also disproven unless West Columbia Police Department is that inept that they wouldn't go in and investigate or take evidence or samples from the point that Ms. Williams reported that he fell. They didn't even take pictures of the front yard. So I guess they knew that that's not where he was. So the question becomes, why would she say that? She didn't make a mistake. She said that he's lying in her yard, as Peggy pointed out, and that then – oh, no, he made himself across the street to the neighbor's yard. He asked, the operator asked her, is he moving? And she is reporting to them like she is witnessing this event as it is unfolding. It's already happened.
And she was never questioned. She was never questioned.
If you listen to her tell the little boy when the phone, before the operator comes on the line, she says, Richie, lay down. Somebody's breaking into your father's truck, as though the situation is just occurring.
Right.
And then when she's on the line with the operator, she says, listen, he pointed a gun at my husband.
How would she know that if she wasn't out there with him or he had already shot my brother and went in the house? How would she know that?
Yeah. She said, listen, I mean, pay attention. If you listen to the 911 tape, and we'll play it again before the end of the show, but if you listen to her, you know, her demeanor seems very calm before the operator comes on. Then it changes, and she seems very shaken. And, you know, two things that stand out. She says, listen, you know, he pointed a gun at my husband. You know, and then she's talking to the son and saying, somebody's breaking into the truck as though the act is occurring, as though someone was doing what they were, you know, that Mark was breaking into the truck at that point. When at that point, it's 3:33. The shooting has already occurred.
And I think Carrie, to point out, you know, what has happened, and again, you know, I refer to the other case that I'm working on as well. You know, it's always great when a homeowner attests that someone is pointing a gun, because I think South Carolinians have learned how to negotiate their perception of the Castle Doctrine. And so it was important for her to make sure that she reiterated and that the operator got that Mark had pointed a gun at her husband in order to create the justification for why her husband had murdered Mark. And these are the things that, you know, as citizens, and perhaps it's because I'm not in South Carolina, and so I can kind of, I'm on the outside looking in from a different perspective. I mean, we got to really, really be careful at the way that people are negotiating the law. And then what's sad and very, very scary for me, and I will say this to the 11th, the solicitor of the 11th District and Major Brothers and others, both in West Columbia and Monk's Corner, Berkeley County, it is really, really frightening for me to think that people like Mark Howard, where this is very, very, it's very, very cut and dry, clear cut, that this does not fall within the realm of the Castle Doctrine or self-defense. But
and we also need to mention what Major Jackie Brothers said to me today. She made it very clear when I said, is this the Castle Doctrine? Is this self-defense? What are we talking about? As Zoe has mentioned several, Dr. Zoe has mentioned several times during the show, what is it, South Carolina Law 16-11-440. I asked her, was it justified under that? She mentioned that it was an amendment or an addendum to that law at some point. And what she said is it related to the self-defense aspect of the South Carolina murder statute as determined by South Carolina case law as established through the courts. The threat was perceived
by Mr. Williams. So it doesn't matter if it was real. She's just saying the fact that it was perceived made it real to Mr. Williams, so therefore they can't disprove that it wasn't real to him. So therefore they're somewhat saying she would not use the word justify. When I said, so are you saying that it was justified? She would not use agree to that term, but
she's been telling me that.
Well, she wouldn't use that term with me. She said, all I can say is that it was perceived by Mr. Williams that Mark Howard posed a threat.
You know something, Carrie? If I were to stand in a court of law, if I were to be sitting in a witness stand in a court of law, and I began to testify to my opinion of somebody else's perception, there would be objections ringing throughout the courtroom automatically, because that is outside of my scope and realm to be able to ascertain someone's perception. It's highly it's subjective. Major Brothers nor anyone else in the West Columbia Police Department can ascertain somebody else's perception. That's the reason why you have evidence. That's the reason why you have law. Those things are designed to keep criminal justice objective and not subjective. So for her to say that, I mean, it's so far beyond me as a scholar. For her to say that, it doesn't even ring. It doesn't even ring. It's ridiculous.
On the incident report, it says justifiable homicide. That is on their writing. And you guys have both got copies of this.
That's the first one, Peggy?
Yes, ma'am.
It
says incident report. Under it, it says justifiable homicide. And this was closed. My brother was killed on February 14th.
Is AKA meaning when Charlie Condon said, I'm putting home invaders, on notice that if an occupant chooses to use deadly force, there will be no prosecution. I think that's what
they will pay for it if there is. The state will. Go back and read the media, the news on in January of 2001 when Charlie Condon said that.
Well, should call it Charlie Condon, first of all, the South Carolina should not have ever allowed him to make that comment. I mean, really, he was just the Attorney General, not God. And so could he be responsible in some capacity for Mark's death?
Well, I want to say that, I challenged his statement in my request for an investigation and my complaint to the United States Attorney General. And, I've been told that it takes time for them to process. However, I think Charlie Condon is hailed as this great hero because I've seen his statement over and over and over again in my research dealing with these cases. And basically what he did was he issued a mandate to the officials and to citizens in South Carolina that not only, again, supersede the South Carolina law, but it supersedes our great Constitution. And so when you ask the question, is he God or, he's not God, I mean, I don't know. Maybe he's the super law God in South Carolina or something. And, I would like to see how Eric Holder is going to manage that mandate and the continued enforcement of that mandate over top of the law and the civil and constitutional and human rights of the people who are losing their lives in South Carolina and others who are being able to get away with murder by hiding under this mandate or under these misinterpretations of the law and the doctrine. It's very, very scary. We're in a very, very scary place because we're borderlining on vigilantism in South Carolina. And people can say what they want to say to me or about me for making that statement, but we really, really have to look at the way that laws are being misapplied and the way that murderers are being protected by hiding behind Charlie Condon's mandate.
But did Charlie Condon open the window or open the door for homeowners to become executioners?
Yes.
Wow.
I believe so. He's standing behind them. The law enforcement will not even look or investigate homicides at people's homes because they're told not to. It's the law. I was told that so many times. I was sick of hearing it. I told them from the get-go,
I will not stop. This is my brother. I love him dearly, and I will not stop because they're going to get the truth out. And slowly, we're getting stuff. I mean, finally, we are getting things. None of it makes sense. They lie a lot.
Okay, let me ask you all. They, you know, in the newspaper articles early on, like the day of, the day after, they said that Mark was a homeless man. Do you think, Peggy, that because they considered him a homeless man, and by the way, for those who may have not followed this story, both the shooter, the homeowner, Richard Wayne Williams, and Mark Howard are both Caucasian. And not that that should matter, but I'm just putting it out there. They declared Mark homeless. Do you think that at any time that factored into the fact that they just said the homeowner's right and therefore Mark Howard had to be in the wrong?
Yes, I do, because they put that out there that he was homeless. They said that he didn't have any ID, that he had no family, and I really believe they thought nobody was going to speak up. And when we found out, of course, we all started calling and started saying what's going on. That is what they do down there. You know,
so we're going
to
go to his brother.
Him is a nobody.
I think that really that speaks volumes. That's the way I see it. That they really considered the fact that they said initially they didn't find any ID on him. You know,
there was ID on him.
And there was
his driver's license for all.
But police department. I think it was within his clothing, and they didn't pat his clothing down well enough to find out actually that there was $64 in dollar bills, all in dollar bills in his clothes, as well as his driver's license and what, Social Security card as well or something like that?
Yes, Social Security card. And they were saying there was no identification. It was all over the media and the news. There's no identification that he had not been claimed. Of course he was claimed. As soon as we found out, we flew him home.
We're going to open the line to his brother, John. Good evening, John. How are you? Welcome to Center Stage.
Hi. Actually, this is John's wife,
Renee.
Yes.
Hey, hi,
I
Renee.
Just wanted to thank Peggy and Dr. Spencer for bringing this to national attention. And my only comment is, if I lived in South Carolina, I would be worried if I was out walking at 3 o'clock in the morning and somebody thought I was in their yard, would be allowed to come out and shoot me and be an innocent bystander.
Yes.
Yes.
My advice to you, caller, is don't walk in South Carolina at 3 o'clock in the morning, because right now it's a very dangerous situation.
Yes, that's what's scary. It's very scary. And I, you know, I'm just going to bring this up briefly. Is there was just a case recently in South Carolina where a family, a father and a son, heard apparently they saw an intruder out in their yard. Both of them took guns out to search for this intruder at 3 o'clock in the morning, and the 14-year-old boy shot his father. Now, what are they teaching their kids down there?
Also, Carrie, I want to add to what Peggy just said, and I made this statement in a press conference with the other case that I'm working on. Mm-hmm. You know, my statement was, you know, where are we when, as a people, we liken taking human life to a sport? And Charlie Condon's statement declaring open season on home invaders, and even the story that Peggy just talked about, you know, where are we as a people when we can't wait for someone to come on our property or to do some or to take some change from our cars so that we can go and grab our guns and run outside and hunt them down like animals? You know, and I think in the process, I don't know if people feel Peggy's pain or if people feel these families' pain. You know, we're talking about it, and I have to remain objective, you know, in my advocating for them. But, you know, we may not understand, and to us, Mark may just be another homeless person, which he was not, or he may have had a criminal record, or Bobby Gadsden may have been a black man, or whatever the situation is that makes them socially, quote-unquote, undesirable. But they are still family members with people who love them and miss them. And so we got to remember that we're not dealing with a stray rabid raccoon. We're dealing with human life. And I think that's what people are forgetting in this process. And I think that is very, very sad.
Well, I completely agree. And if the rest of the family members from Mark Howard would like to get on the phone and make a comment, now is the time. It was so much about this case that really just, I don't know, was disturbing because, you know, the thing is, if I see someone on my property, I don't know that I automatically want to go outside and challenge them because it's almost as though I'm being the aggressor when I can just call the police and they can handle it and I never have to deal with it. Because as long as they're not posing a threat in terms of coming into the home, I don't know that going outside doesn't make you the aggressor. You know what I'm saying? I don't know that that doesn't make you the aggressor when you do that. Because if the person is outside and you don't, he never said he saw him inside the truck, did he? Did he ever say, did Mr. Williams ever say he saw Mark inside his truck?
No, he did not.
So he never saw him inside his truck. He never saw him take anything that belonged to him. Technically, all he saw this man doing was trespassing on his property. Now, the family is not saying Mark Howard was right to be on his property that night. But, you know, if he was drinking and stumbled onto your yard at 3 o'clock in the morning, do you shoot him just because a drunk man is on your yard at 3 o'clock in the morning? I'm not saying that Mark Howard was drunk, but I'm just saying I don't know that we can just shoot people just because they come onto our property.
Right.
You know, that's the only thing that I'm not understanding. And I just cannot wrap my mind around if alarms and stuff are going off and fences and lights are popping on. I just cannot see that this man was still standing around waiting for the garage door to come up. I'm just saying. I know I wouldn't have been. So I'm just trying to figure out, the family does not believe the account that the homeowner gave. And I, you know, I don't know, y'all. What do you think? But I just find it hard to believe that I
would
have stuck around.
Why would you, if you're so scared and you didn't know the first shot hit the person, why would you dive to the ground and shoot the other round in the air?
Mm.
And then why do you keep going? Because the first two shots missed. That
right.
Listen, someone, the solicitor and everyone else, if they were on their jobs, and I'm going to put it out there, if they're on their jobs and they wanted to objectively and adequately support the finding of self-defense and or justifiable homicide, what they should have done is they should have established that the shot that hit Mark Howard was the shot that occurred in front of the garage, and then you have a case. They did not do that. So I can only assume, and then we have to look at the distance as well, and there's two things with that. The shot that goes into the neighbor's, Eve, that's one. And then the shot that goes into the neighbor's house, and understand that I looked at the crime scene photos, and I think that it was really, really reckless, because the bullet pierces through the neighbor's house, across the door, through the wall, through an exercise ball that is sitting in their living room and lands inside of their entertainment system. And as I'm scrutinizing the crime scene photos, I see the DVDs in the entertainment system, and it's very apparent that those neighbors have children, and I can only be thankful that none of the children or the people who live there were just sitting in their living room on the floor minding their business, watching television, when Mr. Williams decided to run outside and shoot Mr. Howard. And understand that the shot even that went through the neighbor's home was not a shot that Mr. Williams took from the confines of his own garage. He had to have run outside, or walked, if you want to say, either one. He had to have gone outside of his garage and into his drive port and taken the shot, which means that most likely Mr. Howard was already on his bike fleeing Mr. Williams' property, and he took the shot, and he missed again, and then there's a third shot taken when Mr. Howard is on public property on the neighbor's property, and then you shoot him then. Where is the imminent threat of peril to your life or your safety at that point? Where is your perception of fear when you become the pursuer of someone? Where's your perception of fear? And so I'm still waiting for someone to answer that for me, and I want to make it very clear, because I promised Peggy, like I promised my other family, I am, as a human rights activist, I am not going to stop until someone checks the system. And it begins to shift from Mr. Williams as my focal point to South Carolina, the entire state of South Carolina, West Columbia, South Carolina, Monk's Corner, South Carolina, because this is looks like it's established as a pattern of denying the rights to live of people that South Carolina deems undesirable.
Well, I got an answer for your question there, ma'am.
Hey, that's Bob Howard, and Bob Howard is the brother of Mark Howard. Good evening, John.
I'm John. Mr. Williams fired twice. He missed both times, and he chased my brother down the driveway and shot him point blank. That's my brother was dead before he hit the ground. And how that woman can sit and well say that he was in their front yard, then he made his way across the road. There's a bunch of BS.
Okay, yeah,
definitely.
John Howard says that.
Well, I'm trying to be nice about this, but it's a bunch of BS, and it's a bunch of cover-up down there.
I agree.
And you know what? Before I open up the line of Barb Howard, who's holding, I want to tell y'all something. The thing that stuck with me the most about this case, and I think that this, West Columbia, South Carolina, is doing this family so wrong, and this I will go on the record as saying. This family, they gave the body of Mark Howard to this family, okay? But at the same time, they told this same family, we cannot release the personal property of this man unless you go through probate court and prove that you're the next of kin. Well, why would you release the body to some people if you don't think they're the next of kin, but then you can't release a bicycle and $64 and some clothing? That's
well,
crazy.
They're crooked, and I think they're corrupt, and hopefully maybe one day it's all going to come out, the truth anyway, and maybe something be done about it. But
we're not going to stop till something is done.
Oh, no, ain't going to stop.
This is ridiculous for them to be able to get by with this and the law stand behind them and not do anything. As many times as we have called and asked it to be reopened, they won't do anything.
Bob Howard, good evening. You're on center stage. That's the brother, the other brother of Mark Howard.
Actually. This is Christy.
Y'all keep changing it up on me. Okay.
Yeah, they change phones on me.
Okay, so this is Peggy on this line?
No, this is Christy, Peggy's daughter.
Okay.
Mark is my uncle.
Okay, good evening. How you doing?
I'm good. How are you?
I'm good. What do you want to say tonight about your uncle?
About my uncle or just related to the case?
Just in general, your statement about what happened.
Well, actually, I just wanted to thank you for bringing attention to the case and having us on your show, and also just ask all the listeners to do what they can to show some kind of support and bring attention to our case because, this man is basically getting away with murder, and the West Columbia Police Department is allowing him, which in my mind, holds them accountable just as much as him for letting him get away with it.
I completely agree. And the family has a phone number. Can you all put it in the chat room right now? The family has a phone number that they want you all to call. If you know anything about this case, they want your help. They want you to call them on this number and tell them if you know anything about this particular case that can help them get to the bottom of what happened February 14th. That particular night at 2015 Morningside Drive. You know, they just want to get to the bottom of it. They just want some closure, and they don't feel like they're getting the right answers or truthful answers. They don't feel like the police department down there and the solicitor's office is being forthcoming about exactly what happened that night. So they're asking
well, they
for your help. What's the number? Can somebody get the number
story.
Over there?
Why
you know?
Isn't there another 911 tape? If somebody shot through my house, I was their neighbor, there would be another. I'd be calling police. I've asked specifically, is there any other 911 tapes with this incident? They
it's
say
a cover
no.
Up.
I can't believe the neighbors are allowing their neighbor to shoot through their house in the middle of the night.
to cover up.
Yes, it is.
Can y'all give them that number out loud for all those that are not listening via the internet? Can you give the number out that you all want them to call you on if they have information about this case?
Yes, it's 513-834-2404.
Okay, can somebody also post that up in the chat room? For anybody who
Yeah, we're trying to post it right now.
Okay. If somebody has some information, they're just asking you all to contact them because they have asked, like she said, the police department to reopen the investigation. I think you all asked the solicitor, which is equivalent to the prosecutor down there, to reopen the investigation. And basically, what are they saying? What are their reasons for not wanting to reopen the investigation?
I have requested it from the top all the way down. I've spoken with Heather Weiss, the assistant state's attorney. I spoke today with the solicitor of the 11th Circuit. And I have sent email requests to Major Brothers to reopen. The assistant state's attorney basically said that they don't get involved, and understand what I'm saying, that they don't get involved unless there is an ethical violation. And when I spoke with her, which kind of, in my opinion, corresponds with the change in the justification, because originally Peggy told me, and, you know, as I read, that they were using the term justifiable homicide, which is codified in 1611-450, which gives the person immunity from prosecution. And so I'm assuming that they, at that point, that they were using the quote-unquote Castle Doctrine. And so I broke that down for her, how Mark's case did not confine or was not applicable as far as the Castle Doctrine is concerned. Her approach was that she doesn't handle that. You know, they don't get involved unless there's an ethical violation. I needed to contact the solicitor of the 11th Circuit. My point with her is that is an ethical violation if you are claiming something is a justifiable homicide and you're using the Castle Doctrine and it doesn't fit, then that's a problem. Well, now they're saying self-defense. So I speak to the solicitor, and he says, no, it's self-defense. And I asked him to state for me what code self-defense is, because their self-defense laws are codified in 1611-440. He says, no, you know, their laws established by the judge. He's not going to do anything with that. So the next thing is Major Brothers, and her thing is, no, there's a perception of fear. So every time you undo something, it appears that they create something else. And what happens is that when you move from the objectivity of the legislative law, then
hold on
it gets subjective. And so now they move to self-defense, but then you state, you know, you talk about State v. Fuller, which establishes the parameter for self-defense. Now it's the perception of fear, but there is no perception of fear to go by. So in essence, at this point, Mr. Howard's brother stated, you know, to me, it becomes obvious that West Columbia is attempting to cover up this crime and protect Mr. Williams from prosecution. And so my next question is, why? That's the core question. Why?
Okay,
what is so important about Mr. Williams that they're willing, you know, to go against the law and the Constitution, their constitutional obligation to investigate properly? Because right now what I'm looking at is it's a color of law violation, and that's what I'm looking at. So I don't understand why they would put themselves in that predicament. But those are the reasons why they will not reopen the investigation, and none of them make legal or logical sense.
Okay, hold on. If you got some noise in your background, please mute it so that we won't hear it when someone else is speaking.
I thought somebody was judged by what's in their heart,
mm-hmm.
not their bank account.
Mm-hmm.
And apparently Mr. Williams and his family or his wife's family has got money, and they get ties to the town or whatever.
Unity. Mm-hmm. I want to question something that was on that Lindsay police report. It kind of states that, you know, that he observed a person on a bicycle coming toward him and saw a bright light. Now, I'm just saying, and I'm not trying to start nothing, but I'm just saying, if you're riding a bicycle with a backpack on your back and you got $36.47 in change and whatever else is in your backpack, and you're trying, it's in the middle of the night, and the guy is pointing a gun at you, is it likely that you have a light flash at him and you're holding this? You got to be holding the bike with one hand, I would assume, as well. So how is it that the flashlight, and it's lit, can be perceived as a gun? Does anybody get where I'm going with that? If you're on a bicycle, if I can tell somebody at night is on a bicycle and they're riding the bicycle toward me, let's just say, you just go with his theory that they were riding the bike toward him. Okay, if they're riding the bike toward me, they got to at least be holding the bike with one hand. And then with the other hand, they're flashing a flashlight at me. So how is it that I ever think that the flashlight is a gun?
How about this? How about if you stayed in your house with your garage door closed and called the police, you would never have seen the flashlight pointing at you in the first place. How about that?
Yes, ma'am.
There's an automatic light there at his garage door, I believe, and it would have came on. So how could it have been so dark?
How about if you stayed in the house and called the police?
Exactly.
Then
called the police before you killed him.
We wouldn't be here right now. See, and that's the point of the law. If he had stayed in his house and called the police, instead of running outside with his .38 to confront Mark for tampering with his truck, we wouldn't be here right now and Mr. Howard would still be alive. And he would have been able to go to trial for whatever misdemeanor offense they would have been able to charge him with, because as it stands now, as you state, based on the evidence, the only thing that they really could have charged him with on Mr. Williams' property is trespass. That's it.
Mr. Mayor.
And in this whole thing about perceived threat, you know, do we really want to open up the law to a degree that we say everybody who's crazy can say they perceive somebody to be a threat to them, so therefore they kill them? Do we really want to give the law that much leeway? Or should we really challenge the Castle Doctrine? Not that we're trying to say we're on the side of anybody that's doing anything wrong, but at the same time, I think we're giving this law way too much leeway here that, in the situation where there's no threat. I mean, if the guy's on a bicycle and he's trying to get away from you, why then would you shoot him if he's got a flashlight? I mean, you have the ability to knock him off of the bicycle. You have the gun on him. Why would it be necessary to take that shot? I don't
Mark
know, y'all, but we're going
house.
Back.
Mark was past that house on his bike when he got shot. That man chased him down.
We're going to go back to the 911 case.
There's no way it happened like he said it did.
No way.
Okay. If you just tuned in, you're listening to the all-new KLHD's 98.9 The Talk, bringing you center stage for tonight's topic, does the Castle Doctrine justify the murder of Mark Howard? If you're on the phone lines and have a question or a comment, press 1. Or if you're listening in via the Internet, dial in at 347-850-8390, and again, press 1. A reminder, the chat room is open tonight, so if you have a question or a comment, you can post it up in the chat room, and I will pose it to the panel before the end of the hour. Tonight's segment of Center Stage is being brought to you by African American News and Commentary Blog, your single source for news, events, and commentary that is of unique interest to African Americans. They're located on the web at www.africanamericannewsandcommentary.com. Tonight's segment of Center Stage is also being brought to you by Daily Deposits for the Soul, your daily guide to enriching your soul and improving your mind in just 15 minutes a day. They're located on the web at www.dailydepositsforthesoul.com. Okay, y'all, we're going to go back to the 911 tape. See what happened that night. A lot of interesting things are heard on this tape. Let's just see if you hear what I hear. Give me 1 second to cue it. And we will hear the wife of Richard Wayne Williams call 911 that night. And remember, on this tape, they have a thing down in West Columbia, South Carolina, that you are being recorded before the 911 operator ever picks up the receiver. So if you're saying anything prior to the operator picking up, you're being heard. So you will hear some of that in just a second, which is very interesting. I think they should do that everywhere, if the truth be known.
Yes.
I'm sure they've heard a lot of very interesting things with that particular device on the phone that allows it to pick up before you are actually even connected. It appears that you're not connected, but in reality you are already connected to the 911. The operator just hasn't picked up the line. Give me 1 second to cue it. And we will hear the wife of Richard Wayne Williams calling 911. Okay, here we go. Here we are.
Monday, February 14th, 2011. The time, 3:33 a.m.
Mark up by the garage.
But I thought, well, I guess, wait. I thought the autopsy said that the shot was taken from 10 feet or greater.
10 feet. It was taken from approximately 10 feet.
10 feet.
That's,
so
10 that's
feet is not right up on someone, is it?
No, it isn't on someone. However, when you look at the when you look at the diagrams, the distance from the edge of Mr. Williams' property, this is the distance from his curb of his property to the neighbor's yard where Mark was found is 58.6 yards. Feet, I believe. The distance from Mr. Williams' garage to the point where Mark's body is found is approximately 130-something feet.
Mm-hmm.
So when you look at the coroner's report that says that he was shot at a distance of approximately 10 feet, then again, you have to question, and the fact, it's not my opinion, you know, when we get our opportunity to go to court, medical experts will be able to testify to this. I've only researched it. I'm not a doctor. However, when we get to that point, they'll be able to state that without any blood evidence anywhere and the magnitude of Mark's wounds through his lungs, piercing both of his lungs and through his heart, where blood is flowing out at a rapid pace, and his ability to oxygenate his body is done,
mm-hmm.
He's not pedaling a bike 137 feet, period.
He's not getting up from their yard, walking across the street to go to the other yard.
He fell at the point where he was shot. So now you look at the 10 feet, then you have to understand that somebody was in the street pursuing Mark and shot him from 10 feet, because if it's 58 feet from the point of Mr. Williams' yard to where Mark's body was found, somebody, like Mark's brother has stated, somebody was pursuing him, and they shot him within that distance.
I'm going to go on record and say...
Thank you, ma'am.
Thank
and the
you,
coroner
sir.
Has stated it is not justifiable. It is homicide.
Wow, the coroner's report says it is homicide.
Yes, ma'am, it does.
Wow. So why, if the coroner says it is not a clean shot and that, you know, it was not justified that it's homicide, so why then does the police findings come back different?
No.
Hold on, Peggy.
Let me jump in because I have to explain the technicality of that. It's not the coroner's job to determine justifiable or not, and this is the same thing with Bobby's case. What they determine is the manner of death. And homicide simply means that a man's life is taken by another man, or one, and this is, you know, gender, that a human's life is taken by another human being. The coroner cannot establish a finding of whether or not it's justifiable. Their job is just to determine the manner of death. The police, they can supply the evidence, though, and then the police department is responsible for making that determination. So when the coroner says in the report that it's a homicide, and this is the same thing with Bobby's case, that it's a homicide, it doesn't mean that it's justifiable or not, because he or she is not able to get into that realm of establishing whether or not it's justifiable. So I need to state that for the record and in defense of the coroners, because they're not taking a position.
Okay. Another thing, I would just want to say to the family, if you all believe that this is not the case, the homeowner's account of what happened is not what you all believe happened, and you all are wanting the investigation to be reopened, why don't you all ask the people tonight to get on the phone and call the solicitor's office Monday morning and get on the phone and call the West Columbia, South Carolina Police Department and ask them to reopen the investigation of Mark Howard. I think that should
be
the
campaign. Any help is great, yes. Any help is greatly appreciated.
If someone would post up the phone number, I have the phone number for the West Columbia, South Carolina Police Department. That's area code 803 794-0721. I think that, I mean, if that's what you all are saying and you really believe that your brother was murdered and it wasn't a situation in which this homeowner really felt that his life was in danger, I think you should ask the people to get behind you, whether that be in a petition or actually in a phone calling a campaign to the solicitor's office. Flood them with letters, calls, emails, and tell them that you want the investigation reopened because that you all feel that Mark Howard was murdered.
That's a very good idea.
And what I would like, from my position as an advocate for a family, for the family, because again, you know, I am neither an attorney nor am I a medical doctor, and I need for someone, you know, some attorneys in South Carolina who understand the magnitude of this situation and who aren't afraid to be chastised by their community for standing up for human rights above this mandate. I need for them to be able to step up and assist, you know, people whose family members are being taken from them. And the laws that are being broken, both not just the ethical codes and the state statutes that are being misapplied, but I'm talking about the breach of constitutional law and the responsibility of the police departments and public officials to carry out and uphold the law and to uphold the civil rights and the human rights of citizens. I need for attorneys in South Carolina, I need for somebody who has some kind of ethical code to stand up and say enough. Because, you know, this is, Peggy has reached out to me, the Williams family reached out, and it's bigger. And I'm surprised that people are not understanding the magnitude. And I'm going to say this to the listeners as well as what I call a call to consciousness. You know, it's always easy when it's happening to somebody who doesn't look like you or somebody, you know, that may have blemishes that you may not have. But, you know, if we don't attach, and people have asked me, you know, what's my reasoning for, you know, engaging in these cases? You know, if we don't look out for the people who society has thrown away or deemed unacceptable, at some point the problem grows until it attacks your own family. So we can all sit back and wait and say, oh, well, Bobby wasn't me or Mr. Howard wasn't me, and we can sit back in our comfort zones if we want to, but unless the people recognize that you may think that you're going to have the privilege of being the perpetrator and being protected, but you may not know that either you or your family can also become a victim. And if it were you or your family, how would you want the law to respond?
I agree. If you just tuned in, you're listening to the all-new KLHD's 98.9 The Talk, bringing you center stage for tonight's topic, Does the Castle Doctrine Justify the Murder of Mark Howard? Listen, one thing that I noticed on this case as well, it didn't seem like they thought Mark had a family. It really didn't. It just seemed like I talked to the major down there, brothers, several times, and I just really kind of got the impression that they didn't see y'all coming, that they really just kind of thought, you know, we close the investigation and it's done with. Do y'all think that they're surprised at what you all are doing at this point?
You know, doubt in my mind.
Definitely, yes. They thought, I believe, because I don't believe we're the only families, us or Bobby's, families that this has happened to. I believe it's been going on for years, and I believe families have probably gave up because they've been told so many times from the police departments, nothing's going to be done. It's self-defense. It's the law. It's the law. And they gave up. We don't give up. Our family doesn't give up. Our family is not going to stop until there's some justice for our brother.
Okay. We're almost down to our last 15 minutes on the show. For the family of Mark Howard, I would like you all to get on the phone and tell the people who Mark was, because I think it kind of humanizes the story a little bit. When I first heard Mark's story, I didn't see a picture. They called him a homeless man. And so I think that people who read the story didn't connect with him because they didn't They couldn't humanize what they couldn't see or identify with. So
yeah,
I think that was what
pictures.
I kind of picked up from the story. I really didn't, I thought to reach out to the family initially, but I didn't know how because they had identified him as a homeless person and kind of like a drifter, and I didn't know. And so I think y'all need to get on the phone line tonight and tell us who Mark is or was. Dr. Zoe Spencer, I'd like, before they do that, though, for you to tell us why that you're asking them to reopen the investigation. What are the grounds that you're telling them to reopen the investigation? I saw a letter that you sent to Captain Ziegler with the West Columbia Police Department and Major Jackie Brothers. What grounds are you using to tell them that you feel the investigation should be reopened?
Because based on my understanding of every single law, code, statute, rationalization that they have used to support a finding of self-defense and or justifiable, none of it matches. It does not stand up, and that's just the bottom line for me. You know, above the emotions of it all, you know, I like to look at things objectively, and, you know, I like to gather the evidence. So my first point of business was getting the evidence. I need to get the crime scene photos. I need to get the measurements. I need to get all of these things. And, you know, once I got everything and I sat down with it versus the statute and the laws in South Carolina, none of it adds up. And so there is no way that they can support a finding of justifiable homicide, and there's no way that Mr. Williams should be able to get away with the act. You know, there's something in the law called provocation, and this is my assumption. And not that I don't understand it, because I understand that we get angry. This is my opinion. He saw Mr. Howard by his truck, and he got mad, and he had a gun. And so he decided that he was going to confront Mr. Howard because Mr. Howard was on his yard by his truck. He shot, he missed, and it wasn't good enough that he missed, but he continued to shoot until he actually murdered Mr. Howard. In their statute in South Carolina, there's something called malice aforethought and then provocation. Mark may have provoked his anger by being on his property, but that did not justify his use of deadly force. Basically, he willfully and intentionally intended to inflict bodily injury or death upon Mr. Howard. And the bottom line is for me, and the reason why I'm asking and I appeal to the conscience and the law of the officials is because I really wanted to believe that they were going to do the right thing and charge him, if nothing else, with involuntary manslaughter and allow the courts to decide. The solicitor's testament that, you know, he has to be able to disprove self-defense, well, it doesn't meet the burden of proof for self-defense because, number one, he instigated it by going outside and opening his garage, and number two, there was another probable cause of action that he could have called the police safely inside of his home and none of this would have happened. Castle doctrine out of the window on every incident. So, you know, my question is, you know, why? Why? And that's why I've asked them. And I've also asked them because if they didn't, as they haven't, it only strengthens my call to the United States Attorney General because at this point I'm getting phone calls from people in South Carolina, you know, many, some of which I can't really negotiate because they fall within the confines. But I need for the United States Attorney General to go in and take a look at South Carolina because right now it looks as if South Carolina is operating outside of the confines of the Constitution. And, again, you know, that's a big no-no. So, you know, that's why I asked. And, you know, it just will be what it's going to be, I guess.
Okay. Family of Mark Howard, when you heard about this particular shooting, did it sound like Mark? Did it sound like Mark would have pointed anything at the homeowner
no.
in a situation like this?
No, Mark. No, Mark's hands did not leave them handlebars. He was leaving. He was getting out of there. He would have not put his arm up. He didn't have no weapons. He didn't have no guns.
I heard you.
He didn't
all
have but a backpack on. He was on a bicycle with a backpack.
I heard you all say that Mark was right-handed. If he
is right-handed.
Left hand, that meant the hand he uses would be the hand that he supposedly stole all these things through, and that wouldn't have had a glove on it. So why was there no fingerprints on the truck, inside or outside the truck?
He didn't steal nothing.
Exactly. Yeah.
He didn't take anything. They're trying to say he took change. I don't believe it.
I saw the crime scene photos, y'all, and I can't prove it, but looks like the man washed his truck that day. I mean, I don't know if it's just fate was working against him. I don't know. But that truck looks like it's cleaned, and which would categorize and be consistent with the fact that there was no fingerprints on anything, because he probably washed the truck. It was Valentine's Day. I don't know. But
it was going to be
Valentine's Day that next day, I guess.
The next day, why did he go and take his property and everything out of his name?
Oh, no,
the
that's a
took
great
the pro-
point
his property
right
out
of his- He did do that.
Yeah,
huh?
That's a great point. That right there, that's a great point that he brings up. Did you hear him, Carrie, what he did?
I'm trying to wrap my mind around it. So Richard Wayne Williams, the following day after this shooting, so the next day, the 14th is the morning of the shooting, the next day, the 15th, the house is out of his name?
Yes, he put it in his wife due to their love and affection.
And Peggy, in her astuteness, has provided a copy of the transfer of deed.
Wow.
And it's hard to say what else he's done getting rid of. If he's so innocent, I don't know how anybody can be innocent of murder, but why would you go the following day, not even 24 hours, and change your property and who knows whatever else?
Well, you all and for those who have listened to the story tonight.
This is public record is how we know that.
It's public record.
Sure.
It seems like the crime scene photos discounts what Richard Wayne Williams said happened that night. If the truck is cleaned. I mean, it's wiped down. You know, there's no fingerprints anywhere, not even his, it appears, on the truck. So, it's kind of hard to believe that a man with one glove on, and that is not even the hand that he uses, would be able to go into this truck, steal $36 worth of change, and not touch anything. I don't know. I mean, at least how did he get into the truck? He had to at least open the door, you would think. But no fingerprints were even found on the outside of the door. So that's just very interesting. Where was the blood trail that led from the garage all the way down the driveway and across the street? Major Jackie Brothers told me today that the blood was contained inside the jacket or inside the clothing.
You've seen the pictures, didn't you, Carrie?
Huh?
You seen the pictures, didn't you?
Yeah.
Were they bloody?
Not really. Which would be consistent with Dr. Zoe Spencer's account that, if he died, where he was shot, then there would not be a pattern from the garage all the way across the street. Correct, yo?
Right.
Okay. So, there seems to be many inconsistencies. Enough that I would think that if I was the police department that investigated this shooting, I would say, listen, I'm not going to leave the burden on me. Why don't we just go back and indict this guy and let a jury of 12 decide whether he's guilty or innocent? Why do you think that didn't happen? Why are they using terms like that they couldn't prove it beyond a reasonable doubt, which is a term that Major Brothers said to me. We could not disprove Richard Williams' account beyond a reasonable doubt. I thought that was not their job to do that. I thought that was the job of the jury.
A cover-up.
They said the solicitor told me that there would be no 12 jurors in South Carolina that would convict a homeowner.
Well, I don't think that's for them to say.
No, but Carrie, what she's saying is profound because, again, it goes back to the way you opened the show. Charlie Condon has issued a mandate, and now because people have internalized his mandate as superseding the law, they can safely hypothesize, because that's hypothetical, for you to try to get in the minds of 12 people that you don't even know yet and assume that they're not going to convict. But now, you're so confident that the mandate of Charlie Condon is going to supersede. So in essence, basically what they're saying in South Carolina is any homeowner has a right to kill anyone who's on their property. And my concern, as I said in the Bobby Gaston case, that's not the law.
And if the gun owners and the homeowners want to lobby and change the law to state that a homeowner can shoot anybody who's on their property, once you step on the property, you're fair game. If that's the mandate that they want to issue, then they need to put that in the law, and then I have no grounds to stand on, and I can't support families like Mr. Howard's or Mr. Gaston's family. I can't support it, but right now, as the law stands, that's not what the law states. And then I want to go real fast because this is my opinion is that they're cowards, and I'm reading something that Deputy Solicitor Dayton Riddle said back in February with reference to the case. He says the question was asked is, do you have any evidence whatsoever that this is anything other than self-defense, said Riddle. And the answer I got was, we have zero evidence that it is anything but self-defense. However, he goes on to say, like Peggy stated, that they would have to disprove self-defense. Nah, are you cowardly and you're not willing to do your job as a prosecutor? Self-defense has four core components. Two of those components were not met. So by your own standard and by State v. Fuller, which is the common law established by your judges, you should have prosecuted the case. And then, yes, you may win, you may lose, but is your win-loss record more important than standing up for your ethical responsibility and your legal responsibility across the board? Then you have to let the jury decide whether or not they're going to prosecute. But it is your job, if the standards of the law are not met, to prosecute the case. And in the case of Mark Howard, everyone in West Columbia should have moved the case forward, and Mr. Williams should have been charged with something. Mm-hmm. Something.
Mm-hmm. It looks like there should have been some type of charge, manslaughter.
Definitely.
Or something. Or, you know, basically, I just don't think that it was the police department or the solicitor's job to state that they could not disprove it. I think that was up to the jury.
Right.
That's just I think in the case of these shootings, I guess where I'm at on the Castle Doctrine, y'all, is we don't want every time there's a shooting for the investigating police department to walk in and in 5 minutes take just solely the account of the shooter, the homeowner, and say, okay, if he says this happened, then therefore it must have happened, so it's justified. I don't know that that's a road that we really want to go down, I'll be honest with you. That sounds scary to me because it sounds like to me that I can be angry with you, invite you to come to my home, and then say you were threatening me or breaking in, and then therefore somebody can be shot, and then the homeowner is therefore justified because they say this is what happened, and their account
right.
is all that's going to be considered. That's scary.
Yes.
That's just what we need to consider on this Castle Doctrine self-defense law, is that every shooting needs to be investigated.
Absolutely.
Everything needs to be investigated. Okay, family, we're down to our last 4 minutes. Does anybody want to make a comment about who was Mark Howard? Down to our last 4 minutes.
I will.
Okay.
He's our brother. We love him very, very much, and that will never stop. Mm-hmm. He was a kind man.
Mm-hmm.
He was a person that was not materialistic. He had no responsibilities, no kids, no wife, and he liked to travel. And they're wanting to say he's homeless and he's estranged. He's 44 years old. We can't make him stay in Ohio. There's days I wish I could be free like that and just travel where I want.
Mm-hmm.
And that's a type, he would do anything for any of us.
Mm-hmm. Wow.
Yeah,
I used to
live in Florida, and he'd come down there and visit a couple times, and I introduced him to some people that I knew down there, and he just traveled.
Mm-hmm.
He went back and seen them people.
He was a free spirit.
I can tell you one thing.
He'd get on a bike and go anywhere.
I'll be 52 here in a couple of months, and I've never seen my brother carry a pocket knife.
Wow.
He was harmless.
Wow.
He was harmless.
So it doesn't seem likely, though, that Mark would have had the flashlight and raised the flashlight
That flashlight, I don't know where that mysterious flashlight come from, but all of a sudden, because there wasn't no mention of no flashlight, after all these stories from the investigators and the police department, they kept changing them, the story, and all of a sudden here comes a mysterious flashlight. Was my brother's fingerprints even on the flashlight?
I don't
think the flashlight was moved. From what I understand, it was moved by his hand and by his feet. Why would you be moving a crime scene?
Well,
the
you don't do that.
Stuff around
that,
the crime scene.
No,
why would
no,
you do
but
that?
You, but you know what though? You do it, and it's the same thing with Bobby in the handcuffs. You know, my theory, and it's a theory, is that the flashlight belonged to the crime scene investigator. It's dark outside, and he needs to be able to take photos, and so he was using his flashlight to illuminate Mr. Howard's body so that they could take pictures. So, and again, there's no record of any flashlight on him. That story just emerges later, and we have to be able to depend on incident reports as
objective
evidence and objective accounts of what's present. And like I said before, if it's not on your official incident or your official investigative report, then it probably wasn't there when you were doing the work. And so
okay, that has to be the final word, y'all. I'd like to thank Dr. Zoe Spencer for being with us, along with the family of Mark Howard. Also, a reminder, the views and opinions of our guests do not necessarily reflect that of Center Stage or this host. Also, the family is asking for your help. They're asking for you to call the Monk's Corner Police Department, I mean, not Monk's Corner, I'm sorry, West Columbia Police Department, and ask for them to reopen the investigation of Mark Howard shooting. You all want to give that number out again?
It's 513-834-2404.
Okay, that's the number if you're going to, if you know anything about this story.
That's
that,
for us, for the family, Mark's family. It's for anybody that knows anything that wants to help us.
Yep.
We do believe there's more cases out there that has just been pushed aside, and there needs to be something done.
Okay. Thank you again, everyone, for being a
thank you for having us on, Carrie.
Thank you.
Thank you, and we love you.
Thank you.
Carrie.
And I'd like to say to the audience, thank you so much for listening. Okay, y'all, we'll see you next time. Bye-bye.
Bye.